she's about ready to go now. I'll ask you, tell me your name, and then I'll ask you questions that'll just let you go right into it. See? As soon as I get it going here. All right, this is Ben Blee, and I'm talking with Alton H. Starling, who was a member of the crew of the battleship. Alton, when did you first report aboard the battleship? Tell me about when it was and where the ship was at that time.
I reported aboard the North Carolina off Key West in the latter part of January 1942 after 6 weeks boot camp training in Norfolk.
I see, and how old were you at that time?
I was 15 years old at that time. I had falsified my address, my age as 18, and come into the Navy on December the 8th. I volunteered and was sworn in on December the 12th.
Well, do you know of any other man that ever served in the ship who was as young as you were?
Not to my knowledge. I'm the youngest that ever served aboard.
Well, that's very interesting. How long then did you serve in the battleship?
I stayed aboard the battleship until September the 31st of 1943, after we were torpedoed. When we came into Pearl, I was transferred back to the States for new construction.
I see. Well, when you first got aboard the North Carolina at the age of 15, what was your first job? What division were you in, and what did you do in the ship?
I was signed to the 6th Division, which has the 5-inch gun battery on the port side, and I was in the deck force in that part, plus working in the magazine.
We'll resume. We were interrupted. Now we're back to Alton Starling.
I was on the deck force, working in the deck force general work, and with the 5-inch 38 batteries. I was signed. My battle station was in the lower magazines, the 5-inch 38 Mount 4.
I see. Well, what were you doing down there? Handling shells or powder or what?
Handling powder, sending it up to the gun whenever they were being fired. We supplied the gun with extra powder.
I see. And did you stay down there on that battle station or do something else?
I stayed on that for a number of months, and later I was moved up to powderman on the lower handling room below the mount, which sends the powder up to the gun to be when it's fired.
Uh-huh.
And I stayed there until the day before our first air attack, when I was assigned as powderman on the left gun of Mount 4.
All right, now let me interrupt a minute. This takes us up to just before the Battle of the Eastern Solomons, which was the first big air attack that the North Carolina experienced. The battle took place on August the 24th and the 25th, and it is the battle in which people on other ships thought that the North Carolina was on fire because of the volume of fire that the 5-inch battery in particular was putting up. Now we'll go back to Bill Starling. Tell us again your battle station the day before that battle.
I was assigned as powderman on the left gun of Mount Number 4. And I worked out for about an hour on the dummy machine as loaded. I had never fired the gun or helped fire it. And when the air attack came the next morning, that was the first round we fired, was the first time I'd ever helped fire a gun. And I think that's the scariest I ever was.
Well, how'd everything go? I mean,
well, the first round powder I put in when they called it commenced firing, everything went off fine, but the second round, as the gun captain hit the spade to trip it, the gun elevated, he thought he had tripped it and stepped back, and I did too, and it was my signal to throw a second can of powder in, and when I threw it in, the spade had not been tripped, and as the gun would elevate and depressed, it was sliding up down the leather pad in the where the gun...
You mean that bag of powder was just loose in there on the deck?
It was the copper casing. It was just loose, sliding up down as the gun would elevate on automatic control.
This was the copper casing with the charge in it.
Right.
And that would just fly around loose.
Well, it wasn't loose. It was laying in the gun, sliding up down. There's a leather pad underneath the gun, the pit, where the gun, when it elevates.
Yeah.
Well, it was sliding up and down that, And, of course, being greased as slicked onion, it was hard to get out of there.
Yeah.
And I was down on my knees trying to get it out, expecting it to blow up in my face.
Yeah.
And after I got it out, it was, and the gun captain tripped the spade, and I reloaded, and I settled down then. Didn't really have time to realize how scared I was after that until about halfway through the gun battle, the patterman on the opposite gun started hitting me on the back, which was a signal to, when we were firing, you couldn't hear each other. That was a signal to quit loading.
Uh-huh.
And I stopped and turned around to see what was wrong, and he had dropped a can of powder in the pit underneath the gun. And the local, gun control, sky control, had control of the gun, and it was elevating and was coming down on the can of powder.
That could have broken the casing open.
The mount captain hollered to switch the local control, and the officer in the sky control said, "Who in the hell hollered that?" He said, "Damn it, I said it." And he stopped the pointer, switched the local control, and it stopped about 2 inches from the primer on that can of powder. That would have blew up if it had touched it. It would have blew up.
That would have killed every man in that mount, wouldn't it?
It would have blew the whole mount up.
Yeah. Well, Bill, after that can of powder was out of the pit on the starboard, on the right gun of your mount, then what happened in that battle?
We commenced firing, switched back to automatic control and commenced firing, and we fired, during the battle lasted 8.5 minutes, we fired 132 rounds. And the only mount on the ship to fire more than us was the Marines in Mount 2, which fired 138 rounds. And we fired the second most rounds, even after 2 foul-ups. And during the battle also, when it was over, we come out of the mount. All of us looked like we'd been through a shower.
I don't doubt it.
And there was water all over the deck, and the 50 caliber machine guns that were just forward of us, we asked them where all the water come from. And a 500-pound bomb had hit the guardrail just by the mount and glanced into the water. And when it blew up, it blew the water all over the ship.
Uh-huh. Well, Bill, all that's very interesting, especially in light of the fact that you were the youngest man on the ship. Now, let's go back to that point. Did anybody ever find out about that? And if so, what happened then?
Yes, sir. A few weeks after the battle, about halfway through our cruise, which was 72 days, I received a letter from my sister advising me that my mother was in Duke Medical Center with cancer, not expected to live, and wanted to know if she saw the Red Cross, I could come home on emergency leave. I went up and talked to Chaplain Albert about it, and he advised me I couldn't get an emergency leave. And while talking to him, he asked me how many sisters and brothers I had, and also their age. And my brother was 18. He asked me how old I was, and I said 18. At which time he asked me if we were twins, and I said, "No, sir." I said, "Chaplain, anybody else I lied to, but I won't lie to you. I'm only 16. I said, "I was 15 when I come on board the ship, when I joined the Navy." And he advised me, asked me, if I wanted to get out of the Navy or did I want to stay in. I told him I'd like to stay in the Navy, and which time he advised me that I had been through 3 battles and was doing a good job. And for me to forget that I told him, and he would forget he knew. And that promised me that the first seaman left the ship going back to the States for new construction, that I would get the transfer. After we were torpedoed and we arrived in Pearl, the first day they got orders to transfer 10 seamen back to the States for new construction. And he asked the personnel officer to sign me one of them. I had learned how to cut hair by then and was signed to the barber shop. And being a barber, the personnel officer wouldn't let transfer me. But Chaplain Albert got him to hold one transfer up until the next morning at 8 o'clock when the exec come back aboard. He was on Liberty. And he contacted me and advised me to pack my sea bag, that I would be leaving the ship as soon as the exec got aboard. And at 8:30 the next morning, they passed the word for me to lay up the personnel office And the guy asked me how long it would take to pack my gear. I said, about 5 minutes. They said, well, get your gear and get to the quarterdeck. You're leaving the ship going back to the States. And that's when I left the SEALs.
Well, Bill, now that you're these many years away from those days and looking back, I know you went on to serve in other ships and other stations in the Navy. But as you look back over it, what memories do you have about the North Carolina, and what did you think of serving in her as compared to other duty stations and other ships?
Well, the North Carolina, since I was born and raised around Goldsboro, being my home state, first time I saw it was as it and the Washington was anchored off Hampton Roads, and I was in boot camp. It was about 5 miles out from the camp. And I looked at it, and I wished myself at that time that I could get signed to board it, not realizing or even dreaming that it would come true. And when I finished boot camp, we were sent to Key West, and I was assigned to the North Carolina, which, me being from the state of North Carolina, made me as happy as anyone could be. And I grew up on this ship and changed from a boy to a man, in my opinion, and the finest training that I ever got was on this ship. And in my opinion, it had the finest crew and was the finest ship in the Navy.
There you go.